Okay, so there's the title of the talk, Women at High Risk for Diabetes, Access and Quality of Health Care, 2003 to 2006. This is based on a report that CDC and the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality developed to look at data, national data sets, to address diabetes issues and women's health issues. And those are my colleagues, Gloria Beckel, Sarah Lewis, Shaquay Kaptarian, and Paul Gorell. I have no relationships to disclose, except that I have a little boy who is 15 months. He is all my relationship, as well as my husband, who's also my relationship. In terms of diabetes and the statistics, I'm sure many of you know these statistics, but I'll just go over these very quickly. Approximately 26 million people in the U.S. have diabetes, and we know that almost half are women. At least one-fourth of adults have pre-diabetes. We know that this places them at risk for many things, including type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. We also know when women have diabetes or other chronic diseases, they're more likely to have these chronic conditions than men, and they're more likely to suffer disproportionately from disability compared to men. I'm sure that many of you also know about the Diabetes Prevention Program, as well as other studies that have shown that if you have pre-diabetes, you can prevent or at least delay the onset of type 2 diabetes by doing a few things, and that includes losing about 5-7% of body weight, increasing physical activity, and maintaining a healthy diet. We know that early intervention as well as access to preventive care is really important for women to help them reduce their risk for developing other diseases, such as cardiovascular disease. But we also know that many research studies do not focus just on women. They may focus on men and then extrapolate that data for women. But as we all know, I look around the room, we're all women. We know that that sometimes doesn't work for us. We were made differently on purpose for a purpose. So CDC and ARC developed an interagency agreement, and our purpose was to analyze and report on national data sets that looked at quality of care for women with diabetes across the life stages, and we looked at data from 2004 to 2005. We also wanted to analyze and report on national data sets that looked at access to care and quality of care for women at high risk for diabetes, and that's what I'll focus on today. We wanted to better understand if we assess and stratify data by sex, would that reveal vulnerable populations at risk for suboptimal care? So in terms of our methods, we analyzed data from NHANES. We only included women who were 18 years of age or older. And we identified women at high risk for diabetes based on the ADA standards. So a woman at high risk for diabetes includes a woman who is age 45 years or older, with a BMI of 25 or greater, or age 18 to 44 with a BMI of 25 or greater, and any of the following: low physical activity, family history of diabetes, racial or ethnic group in a high risk group, history of gestational diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, history of heart attack, stroke, or peripheral artery disease. And our methods included looking at general health and well-being, access to care, as well as diabetes-related risk reduction. For this presentation, I won't highlight everything that was found in the report. If you would like a copy of the report, please let me know. We have them available in hard copy, tons in the warehouse, and they are pushing us to get this out the door. So please let me know if you'd like to see the full report. So in terms of the data, we're looking at the characteristics of women at high risk for diabetes, as well as those not at high risk for diabetes, looking at NHANES data 2003 to 2006. The data tell us that women at high risk for diabetes are more likely to be older, more likely to be non-Hispanic white, they're more likely to have less than high school education, and they're more likely to have poor or near poor income. So now let's look at some of the data for access to care. This slide looks at the healthcare insurance coverage during the past year among women aged 18 to 64 years of age by diabetes risk status. And it shows no significant difference when we look at risk and not at risk. So let's look at the pointer. The blue is at risk and the red is not at risk. So there's no difference for having any type of insurance, no difference for any private insurance, public only, uninsured all year. The data were pretty low, so we couldn't really analyze that. And then uninsured any period. That's looking at the data overall. But when we began to look more in detail, we did find some significant differences between the two groups. So let's look at the next slide. This slide looked at women aged 18 to 64 years of age with any type of health care insurance coverage during the past year by diabetes risk status and race and ethnicity. So when we look at Mexican Americans, we're looking at risk in green and not at risk in the gold color. And we can see that those Mexican American women who are at risk, they were less likely to have any type of health care insurance than those not at risk. We also found when we looked at risk for non-Hispanic whites, Hispanic blacks, and Mexican Americans, that those who are Mexican Americans and non-Hispanic blacks were less likely to have any type of insurance compared to whites. And then when we look at those who are not at risk, the orange, the gold bar, we see that Mexican Americans, again, are less likely to have insurance compared to whites. We're also looking at healthcare insurance coverage, but this time looking at it by education. So we see that there's no significant difference when we look at risk or not at risk. But then regardless of diabetes status, if we look at less than high school compared to more than high school, those who have less than high school are less likely to have any type of insurance compared to those with more than high school. And then this slide looks at insurance coverage by family income. Again, no difference in terms of at risk or not at risk, but then we see that if you are poor, near poor, or have middle income, you're less likely to have any type of health care insurance compared to those with high income. And then we'll look at the same, we'll look at public insurance by race and ethnicity. So we see that those who are at risk and they're non-Hispanic white, they're more likely to have public insurance compared to those who are not at risk. And then also when we look at non-Hispanic whites and Hispanic blacks, we see that more non-Hispanic blacks are likely to have only in public insurance compared to whites. Okay. And then for this slide, we're looking also at public insurance only by education. And we see on the right-hand side, when you look at high school as well as more than high school, those who are at risk for diabetes are more likely to only have public insurance compared to those not at risk, and the same finding for those with more than high school. And then when you look also at risk, you see that those with less than high school compared to those with more than high school were also more likely to have only public insurance. And this slide looks again at public insurance by income. So we see that there's no significant difference for negative and poor, but there is a significant difference for near poor or low income levels. So those who are at risk for diabetes are more likely to have only public insurance compared to those who are not at risk. But then there's also another finding that was significant, and that looks at those who are negative and poor, near poor, middle income, and high income. Those who are poor, near poor, and middle income were more likely to have only public insurance compared to those with high income. And this looks at those who are uninsured, and we see a huge difference here. We see that for those who are not at risk, that's looking at whites as well as black compared to Mexican Americans, Mexican Americans are more likely to be uninsured compared to non-Hispanic whites. And this looks at uninsured by education level. And we see that there's no significant difference when we look at risk versus not at risk. So that's here, as well as here, and for more than high school. But we do see a significant difference between more than high school and less than high school. So those with less than high school education are more likely to be uninsured compared to those who have more than high school. So now let's look at some diabetes-related risk reduction measures. This slide shows us that there's a non-significant difference in looking at risk and not at risk for women who are aged 18 and over, whose providers measure their blood pressure within the past 2 years by diabetes risk status. Now we're going to look at measuring blood pressure by race and ethnicity, as well as diabetes status. We see no difference when we look at risk versus not at risk for all three groups, but we do see a significant difference between Mexican Americans and non-Hispanic whites, with Mexican Americans being less likely to have had their blood pressure measured compared to non-Hispanic whites. And then this slide looks at blood pressure also by education. Again, no significant difference when we look at risk versus not at risk for all three levels. But we do see when we look at risk for less than high school and high school, they're less likely to have had their blood pressure measured compared to those with more than high school. Same thing is found for those not at risk. They're less likely to have had their blood pressure measured compared to those with more than high school. And then this looks at blood pressure by family income. Again, no difference by overall at risk versus not at risk for all four levels. But we do see that if a person is poor or near poor, again, they're less likely to have had their blood pressure measured compared to those with high income levels. And then this slide looks at obese women with high cholesterol who are given advice about eating fewer high fats or high cholesterol, and we're looking at this by race and ethnicity. We found no significant difference in looking at non-Hispanic whites, non-Hispanic blacks, and Mexican Americans. But when we start to look at it more in terms of family income, we do see a difference, and that is between middle and high income. So those who have middle income, they were less likely to have been told, to have been given advice about eating high fat foods, eating fewer of those high fat foods or cholesterol compared to those with high income. And then this slide looks at obese women with high cholesterol who were given advice by providers 2003-2006. And we see that fewer people were told to exercise to reduce their cholesterol levels. More people were told to eat fewer foods that were high in fat. This slide looks at those women who are obese with high cholesterol and looks at whether they were given advice to exercise to reduce cholesterol levels by race and ethnicity. And we do find a significant difference here for non-Hispanic whites and Mexican Americans. The data tell us that Mexican American women were more likely to be told to exercise to reduce cholesterol in comparison to those who are non-Hispanic white. Now we look at being told to exercise for cholesterol by education, and there's no significant difference for this measure. The next one is on family income. And also we see that there's no significant difference in terms of family income and being told to exercise. So now let's look at self-care. This slide does show a significant difference in terms of women who are aged 18 and over who exercise 150 minutes per week by diabetes status. What we find is that women who are at risk for diabetes are less likely to have said that they exercise for 150 minutes per week compared to those who are not at risk. And then this slide tells us that there is a significant difference when we look at non-Hispanic whites. So again, these are the ones who are not at risk for These are the ones who are not at risk for diabetes. So there is a significant difference here and that those at risk for diabetes were less likely to say that they exercised compared to those not at risk for diabetes. Here we're looking at exercise by education, and we see significance here for more than high school. So those at risk for diabetes with more than a high school education were less likely to have said that they exercise compared to those not at risk for diabetes. Another finding is that those who are not at risk for diabetes, they were less likely to say they exercise compared to those with more than high school and not at risk. And now we're looking at exercise by family income. We do see a significant difference here for being poor and being at risk versus not at risk. Those who were identified as being poor were less likely to say that they exercise compared to those who are not at risk and poor. Same thing, we find it for a high income. Those who are at risk and high income, they were less likely to exercise compared to those who are not at risk. And then also looking at not at risk for poor, we see that they were more likely to say that they exercise compared to those who said that they had high income. This slide looks at women aged 18 and over who tried to lose weight in the past 12 months by diabetes risk status. And we find that those who are at risk were more likely to say that they tried to lose weight in the past 12 months. If you remember a few slides back, these women who tried to lose weight said they were not exercising. So what are they doing? We didn't find that out. So that's just a big question mark for us. Why were they not exercising, but they said that they are trying to lose weight? So now we're looking at also trying to lose weight by race and ethnicity. And across the board, we see those who are at risk were more likely to say that they were trying to lose weight compared to those not at risk. And then regardless of diabetes status, non-Hispanic blacks were less likely to say that they were trying to lose weight compared to non-Hispanic whites. We're also looking at trying to lose weight by education, and we see a similar pattern as the last slide. Those at risk were saying that they were trying to lose weight compared to those not at risk across all three levels. But then we also see those who are at risk for diabetes who have less than a high school education, they were less likely to say that they're trying to lose weight compared to those with more than high school. Same thing for those not at risk compared to those not at risk as well with more than high school. We see a similar pattern here for those at risk versus not at risk. Significant difference across all levels in terms of those who are trying to lose weight by family income. So if someone was poor and at risk, they said that they were more likely to try to lose weight than those who are not at risk, all the way through to high income. But regardless of diabetes status, we see that those who are poor, near poor, they were also less likely to say that they were trying to lose weight compared to those with high income. So in conclusion, because many studies often don't stratify data by sex, we often don't know a lot about women who are at risk for diabetes or even those with diabetes. So it may be really hard for us to know more about their quality of care as well as their access to care. This report adds to our scientific knowledge base by indicating that there are disparities that we need to know more about that look beyond race and ethnicity. We need to better understand what's happening to women with diabetes and at risk for diabetes in terms of their income levels and their educational status. In terms of recommendations, states could use this information from the report to develop programs. The data tell us a lot about women from different income groups, different educational backgrounds. We could target those women in these different areas for programs that reach them to improve their quality of health care as well as their self-behavior. We could also focus on certain life stages, work with adolescents to reach them early, or all the way through to the older years as well to reach them and target them. We need to focus more on public health programs, what the gaps are, what policies need to be in place to help women who are at risk for diabetes, and develop more research as well as surveillance. One recommendation that we have is that the data that I just talked about, those were from a national data set. So it will be really helpful for states to be in looking at what's happening in their own states, more specific to that state, to understand what the gaps are in those areas and where we need to intervene for these women. We could develop programs for those women at high risk for diabetes by focusing on education, teaching them more about how to prevent type 2 diabetes, increasing access to preventive care services, and also increasing healthy lifestyles, including physical activity. So I'm going to stop there. Do we want to take questions now or at the end?
Maybe. Take some now.
We'll take questions now. Okay. We're open for questions. Okay, I know you too. It's only been measured for the national level, but BRFIS data could look at the state level. And that's one thing that we hope to do at CDC, but we really need some help from our state colleagues as well to better understand what's happening for the state. There was a question in the back.
Can you say again where it's from? In
Haines.
In Haines.
Uh-huh.
2003, 2004,
2005, and 6.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Has CDC conducted such studies in selected developing countries, for example, Africa? Like, we should, for example, the diabetes of
This work has not been done in other countries for women, I know, but some of my colleagues are looking at diabetes in other countries, just not for women. Yes. So, yes, it needs to be done. Yes. And it seems like you're a contact for me. Yes. Okay. Joan had a question in Adeline.
First, I'd like to comment that you can get the data online at cdc.gov/BRFSS. And you can even get it for small areas. Not as broken down as this and not as reliable as this because it's self-report. But hey, it's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check on that. What I wanted to ask was on the visits and measuring blood pressure, does that assume that, Mexican Americans went to actual have visits to be measured?
Yes, it does.
So everybody had this. Had visits and they were just less likely to receive a measurement.
It's self-reported data, so it's assuming that they did go for a visit. Yeah.
Okay.
Adeline, and then I'll get you in the back.
Did you try and look at the data? Because one of the sets of slides shows that women of low income and then also the Hispanic population weren't counseled as to exercising.
Uh-huh.
They were counseled about eating, but they weren't actually counseled about exercising. So when it came time for losing weight, when we commented on, well, why didn't they exercise? Well, it didn't look like they had actually been counseled on that.
Mm-hmm.
So that might have influenced
Their behaviors, per se,
thinking that only diet was the way to lose
weight. Uh-huh. And that's a good point. We were not able to do more in-depth analyses with this project. It was more just descriptive.
Okay.
So if we could have done more like ANOVAs, MANOVAs, then we could find out more about what was the actual relationship. But that is a good point.
But those were the women that had been for a visit. Right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Everybody focuses on
food.
Uh-huh.
I'm in the office on Women's Health with H.A. Jackson.
Cool.
We created a database called Quip Health Data Online.
Uh-huh.
Quip Health Data Online.
Okay.
That you can get off of our website, womenshealth.gov. And you're able, we have grabbed the BRFIS data and the national data, and we allow you to look at your data by state and county. And the way we do that is we combine 3 years in a row sometimes in order to make the data more reliable. And so you can look at most of all of the variables. You have at least 5 race and sex.
Okay.
We created it because we couldn't find data by sex and race.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yes.
One, but not the other.
Yes.
And it really irritates us.
Mm-hmm.
All of our regional state women's coordinators said we need the data cross-tabulated.
Yes.
So you can at least do that. Now, we don't have income levels like you do, but at least we have racial.
Okay. And that was Quick Health Stats.
Quick Health Data online.
Quick Health Data. Quick Health Data. Thank you.
Yeah, it's www.womenhealth.gov. And then you you can put in / statistics.
Okay.
And it goes right to the thing. And it's you click on the variable you want, you click on the geography you want, the state or the county you want or nation, and then you click another, this is so easy for me, you click another tab, it's 1, 2, 3, and you get either a table or a map.
Okay.
You can also look at it by region.
Yeah.
You can put the region that you're in, you can put all the states in that region together, or you can actually look at states around your region and also click on that, and that makes it nice too, because you can compare data, back and forth between the various states.
But I applaud you for doing this, because most people don't do it. And are you going to publish this somewhere?
We're working on it. It's going through, clearance.
Yeah. Clearance
is my best friend, yes. It's going through clearance. Yes, we're hoping to publish it soon because the data are getting old, but we also know this is a chronic disease we're talking about, so we don't expect too much to change from now and when we actually looked at the data. So.
Well, it's probably gotten worse.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, where do you plan to publish? Just internally or in a journal?
We're looking at a journal. Mm-hmm. Yes. I can tell you that we had an interagency agreement with the Agency on Healthcare Research and Quality, and we did two reports with them, one with women with diabetes, looking at access to care and quality of care, women at high risk for diabetes. We put in $60,000 into that project for two reports, and that included hiring a data analyst, working across agencies, so it wasn't a lot of money for the project. Yeah.
When the NHANES study to conduct that, it's very expensive and very expensive.
Yeah, to collect it, I'm not sure about that.
Because they actually go to the person's house, they actually interview them, and they collect blood samples and that kind of thing. So it's a very expensive study.
And I'm asking because I'm thinking about the applicability of this to developing countries.
Yeah.
So, whatever I've been hearing, today I've been trying to translate that into developing countries.
Right. I would.
Yet, having to face the growing threat of non-communicable diseases. So, that's why I'm asking this question.
I would recommend that you contact the IDF, the International Diabetes Federation. They actually, once they saw this report, they contacted CDC, our director, Dr. Frieden, and said, we love this report. Here's what we plan to do with this report. They plan to create programs for women across the world to address diabetes issues, women at risk for diabetes. They gave us a nice summary of all the different programs for diabetes issues. And if you contact me, I can share with you what they plan to do. Okay. All right. I don't want to take all the time because I know we're kind of close. But thank you all for your attention and for coming to our session. And now we're here from Joan, who will talk more about another project that's near and dear to my heart. And it's our project that we're working on together with the chronic disease directors, looking at gestational diabetes. Thank you.